Red Pill, Raw Truth with your host, Matthew Horbury. Exposing the lies, uncovering the conspiracies, searching for the truth wherever it takes us. The mainstream has been taken over. It's corrupt to its very core and can no longer be trusted. Our history is nothing more than a lie written to deceive us. Global education is a tool used to indoctrinate us into a system to control our very thoughts and stop us thinking for ourselves or even asking questions. The spirit of mankind is strong, and they know it. That's why they're attacking us from all sides using deadly vaccines, fluoride in our toothpaste and in our water, processed foods that contain harmful additives that have little to no nutritional value. They want you addicted to lifelong pharmaceutical drugs that make massive profits for them and cause misery for those that use them. They spray us with chemtrails that contain heavy metals and other toxins harmful to our health and poisoning the very soil we grow our food in. Using genetically modified food, known as GMO, they are turning the population of the world infertile so they can decide who is allowed to have children. Make no mistake, they want you and your family dead, with those that survive being forced to live in slavery in a one-world dictatorship where every aspect of your life will be watched and under their control. Who are they? The secret society, Satan is scum that rule the world. Red Pill, Raw Truth. No stone left unturned. Every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. UK, on the Shake and Wake radio network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free. Will make you free. Will make you free. Will make you free. Welcome to Red Pill Raw Truth. I'm your host, Matthew Horbury, and today we're not going to be joined by Judy Wood. She might be coming in later, but Andrew Johnson will be joining us in about half an hour, so it's just me for now. Rick Reitner, if he's going to be talking to me as well. But what I'm going to do today, for now, is I'm going to go through some of the oral histories that are, these are the official histories that have, from your firefighters and your lieutenants and your people that were on the ground of 9/11 on the first responders, and these are all under oath. So these can be submitted in a court of law, right? And the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, these people, they put they'll go through these. There's 503 of these testimonies, and they will go to these testimonies and then do a quick text search for the word explosion, and then they will present. Oh, in the testimonies, the official first responder testimonies, there's 118 mentions of the word explosions. Well, they're not putting any context to that. They're just making a blanket statement and presuming that these explosions are bombs. Now, if we go to the these witness testimonies and we do a search and we can read the text around the word explosion, we'll find that there's no mention of bombs, or if they are, it's out of context. So what we'll do is I'm going to have a read through some of these testimonies. Right. So if anybody wants to join me, I'm going to be copying this link and pasting that into the right. Okay, I'm good. Right, so I've got a testimony. The first testimony that we get is I've got Dr. Julie was mentioning me. Right, okay, we've got I'm Paul Ranberg of the Fire Department of Police, New York. The time is now 6:03. I am conducting an interview with Lieutenant Albrum. And he is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... the fourth one down on the list I've posted into the chat room. Now, if we open that out and we search for the word explosion, right, the first gentleman, for some reason, I remember particularly, he was a gentleman in his 70s. He said that he was on the
59th floor of the first tower that got struck. He was actually ordering some kind of food at the cafeteria. I think it's the 59th floor, I'm pretty sure. And thought that when he heard the explosion, that it was the kitchen oven. So this doesn't sound like a bomb. It sounds like he's just heard what he's describing is what he thought we heard was the kitchen oven. And then further down, it carries on again. No, sorry. Right, next testimony. Right, this one is. Oh, sorry, that wasn't Lupin Abrahams. This was that one was a guy, Glenn Azenda or something like that. Is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Eighth down on the list, and that's the kitchen oven guy. This guy is Lieutenant Albrum. On September 11, 2001, I was assigned to our MOS daughter who was sick at the school. Responded there. Before we responded there, I heard the call come down that an explosion occurred at the World Trade Center. Then I called my CO and advised him of such so he can respond. One second, Dr. Julie Woods calling me. I think she's coming on. Because I've got nothing planned, I'm just going to read through these testimonies because it puts it into perspective. Since I've been looking through these testimonies, there's not much mention of bombs, and the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth seem to hammer on these witness testimonies. They make out as though there's bombs everywhere and these first responders are mentioning bombs and bombs and bombs. I've gone down first 10 and there's only two mentions of bombs and one of them's talking about a kitchen oven blowing up. I mean, that's not a bomb. It's 12th one down the list that I posted into the chat room. And we're doing another text search for the word explosion. No mention of the word explosion. I mean, there's 503 of these. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Julie Wood. Welcome to my show.
Hello.
I was just going through the first responder testimonies, doing text searches for the word explosion and trying to put it in context. And I found a few interesting ones. I found one that mentioned the word explosions. And it says... what did they think? Was it? I think I'll close it. They said it sounded like the oven exploding. It didn't sound like a bomb. It sounded like a kitchen oven. So, you know,
you have noise in your oven, like when you're cooking a turkey, you hear something go pop, yeah. Spat.
Yeah. And the architects and engineers, they'll say there's 503 testimonies, these first responder testimonies. And then they just say, and the word explosion mentioned 118 times.
Yeah, when the jumpers, supposed jumpers, hit the ground, they exploded. There's another one. People exploded.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just found another one. Lieutenant, sorry, not that one.
But no one there are a few new identifications of what exactly exploded. Not a whole lot of things. I mean, you're not going to have people identifying a bomb blowing up in their face. But there are some particular ones, and I don't know if I've read them on your show before.
No.
I could read them. I got to change the glasses here. I'm getting serious. Let's see. Patrick Sullivan, a firefighter. He says, there was a deputy chief's rig on fire that was extended to a 113's rig. There was a big ambulance, like rescue company truck, but it wasn't a rescue company truck. It was a huge ambulance. It must have had Scott bottles or oxygen bottles on it. These were going off. You would hear the air go boom, and they're exploding. So he stretched a line and tried to put that out. You could only use booster water. And then there's another firefighter, Todd Heaney. I remember getting a drink of water out of the cooler there. Then we saw. Then we just started to put the car fires out, and the rigs were going, ambulances. I mean, there must have been 50 of these things burning heavily. The Scott bottles and the oxygen cylinders were all letting go. You would hear them blowing up left and right. We've got a distraction here. A four-legged one. Okay. And then there's, let's see, Rene Davila. At this point, was your vehicle lost? He's an EMT. Basically, all we to do is to go around the building, come around, but it looked longer than usual. But it took longer than usual because we're walking in this shit, as we said. Like you move and it's the soot, like heavy dust. We're walking. I realize there's only have two people. I see my vehicle. The seats are covered. I've got my bag. I hold it like a trophy. Some people collect basketballs. I haven't touched. Pause. Whatever the force was, it was so strong it went inside the bag. Makes you wonder what it looks like in there. Then he says, but we were there. Vehicle 219 was destroyed. And his supervisor says, well, was it on fire? And he says, what? And the supervisor asks again, was it on fire? He answers, fire? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom. We were walking up Fulton Street. I don't know how far we made it up when someone says, the building's coming down. By that time, I realized it's a repeat. There's other ones that were describing cars, quote, cooking off. I remember two of the cars. Yeah, I remember, too, the car started to explode inside the parking lot. I mean, the cars started cooking off. They started going off. Boom, 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 boom. I remember that. That was Michael D'Angelo, EMT.
Yeah. And there's other things explode as well. You've got cars exploding. But so when architects and engineers are saying there's explosions going off, they're not putting any context.
Here we have oxygen bottles. Yeah, or that's what one described as, in air tanks. He says oxygen bottles or air tanks. That's what Patrick Sullivan, I've been ridiculed for making that statement, but that is what the firefighter was calling them. And then they're blowing up left and right. And then it says oxygen cylinders. That's a firefighter who says that. And then Rene Davila, his EMT vehicle, emergency medical vehicle, blew up. Another one has cars in the parking lot going off, boom, boom, boom.
And wasn't there a policeman who claims his bullets were going off in his glove box?
Yep, that was in that same, what I call it, the toasted car park.
So there's plenty of explosions going off, and if anybody
at,
just
at street level, at street level, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a wonder what's going on in the building? I mean, you have these humongous air tanks in the building, air pressure tanks. If nothing else, you use for flushing toilets high up, you know, to give it the flush more gusto. I call them turbo toilets. Like, I guess airplanes have that too. Pressurized air, so they don't use much water at all. And so, but you also have water tanks up there. So these would be letting go, using the words of the firefighters. And when the walls of the pressure vessel weaken, at some point they're going to explode. They're going to be over pressure for the amount for the strength of the walls.
Absolutely. So if you put them in context, there's just people say explosion, but there's architects and engineers are making it out as though controlled demolition, bombs, and there's just really no evidence for this.
Patrick Sullivan's using the word boom, going off, and then let's see, blowing up. That's the term by Todd Heaney, and then Rene Davila. We used the term blow up and boom, and Michael D'Angelo used boom, boom, boom. So those are descriptions they're giving.
Yep.
Going off, exploding.
Yeah, I've just gone down the first responders page now. The witness testimonies, I'm just opening them up and just doing a quick text search for the word explosion, because that's what Richard Gates says. There's about 118 mentions of explosion.
Or explode. You also use boom.
Oh,
and
okay.
Blow up.
Yeah.
You also look for blow up.
Right. I was doing the explosion.
Now what happens if you put an egg in your microwave oven? Does it blow up?
Of course it does. Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly not a bomb. So I was just going to, I was trying to find the actual word explosion and read around it to find out what the context is. That's what I was doing just before you joined us. And in the first 20 ones, I'm just going down the list, just the first 20, there's only about three testimonies that have the word explosion in there. So like there's not everybody's going bombs and explosions, you know, running around. It's just
right. There's very few of them. Like even Gage says there's 100 of them. There's out of 500, testimonies.
Yeah, that's like 20% of people. Yeah, so it's blown out of proportion.
And then here's some that actually identified something instead of just hearing a boom. Yeah, you're going to hear a boom. So what? I mean, there's if a house is on fire, you're going to hear a boom. There's some pressurized cans of hairspray or shaving cream or something that are going to explode. You toss those in a fire, they'll explode.
Well, there's plenty of things that go boom. I mean, just without nothing happening, cars backfire all the time just on the street. Is they're just driving away, bang,
I'm just saying, like, if a house is on fire, you're going to have things exploding in there, too. You know, aerosol cans.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
You know, it says do not incinerate on the cans. How many of those cans do you have in your house?
Well, I wouldn't have had so many if I didn't have a wife, but I've got, with the wife in the house, I've got plenty.
She has lots of spray cans?
Oh, she's got creams and sprays and all sorts. It's, absolutely. And I've got fly killers and bug repellents and murdering weapons.
Bug sprays. It used to be much worse in the 1960s and early 70s. Now they have stuff that has more of a pump in it, and it just liquid without being pressurized, because they're saying something about making a hole in the ozone. That was the theme. Whatever the story is,
Yeah, you're right. It were the CFC gases. We had to. Hitting the ozone in one of them.
Their story is. Yeah, their latest crisis on that. But I think they just gave permission to the spray companies to make a different container that was cheaper to make. They didn't have to, put a gas in it. They just, have a bottle with a little pump in it. A little, squirt pump.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything you would like to talk about?
Let's see. Well, there's a theme of... from a certain show where, they're fixated on certain things. Like, here's my question. How do you cover up irrefutable evidence?
You call it theory. And if you put lots of theories out there, it just gets muddled in with the rest of them.
Right. It's just another theory. So, Matthew, do you have a theory that the towers are gone?
Yeah, you don't need to have a theory on that one, do you? We know
they're
gone.
Have you been there?
I haven't been there, but I know a friend who has, and I trust her word.
I've been there. I was there beforehand, and I was there afterwards. And I can, for myself, I can verify that the buildings used to be there, and they're now gone.
Nope.
So
no,
for me, that's not a theory. That's not a belief. It's actual evidence.
Absolutely.
And now, how about a lot of the solid parts of the buildings were turning into dust in midair? Is that a theory or is that an observation?
I think we've observed that by now. I think we've gone over that enough to know that that's what happened.
Okay, so that's not a theory.
That's not a theory.
It's not that you have to go over it enough times so it's not a theory. It's either an observation or it isn't. It's like an autopsy. The autopsy is either conclusive or it's not. The victim died of a gunshot wound, or they died from poison in their system, or it's inconclusive because you didn't find the body for a year, so it's pretty well rotted, so you can't really tell. So, therefore, the autopsy report would be inconclusive.
Yeah.
So, either you know or you don't. You don't have a theory.
What's what I mean? I think we've covered enough evidence over the last couple of weeks to know that that's what happened. I don't think we have to go through all the evidence again. I think we've
right.
It's established now. That's what happened.
Using the analogy with the a dead body, if it's doesn't have a bullet hole in it, you could also rule things out. Like you can rule out death by gunshot wound. Yeah, he doesn't have a bullet hole in him, and he doesn't have, large amounts of bruising. Like the bullet didn't bounce off his skull. You know, there's no holes in his body, and he doesn't have any major bruising. So you can pretty much rule out death by gunshot. But even if you found a gun in his hand, we found a gun over here, or somebody standing in the room had a gun in their hand, so therefore, no, that doesn't mean that the guy was shot to death.
No.
That's a fantasy or something someone's making up. It has nothing to do with the evidence. The evidence would be that there's no holes in the body, so you can rule out death by gunshot. And if the person is still, the body's still warm, in other words, it isn't too long after he died, you can do an autopsy. If it turns out he has lethal amounts of arsenic in his system, you can come to whatever conclusion there. But there's probably, I don't know all the medical details, there's probably other things that you would find, like, blue fingernails or something at the same time to consistent data. I'm not a pathologist, so that's not my... I can't make up those stories as easily.
Yeah, but I know exactly what you're saying. You're saying, you've got to look at the evidence. You've got to look
and
at the evidence, and the evidence looks, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need a theory. The evidence either conclusive or it isn't. Like, if you had a guy out painting his house, and then now his stepladder is overturned on top of him, he's laying on the ground, and, you can see that he's got a big, blunt force to his skull. There's a rock, obviously his head, landed on the rock. And then his neck is broken. You can start figuring out what happened.
Yep.
But a theory isn't going to get you there.
And that's what the people do. The people go, oh, the building was brought down by controlled demolition. And they start looking for evidence to support their theory. And that's the wrong way around.
Right.
Yep. And this is...
Or people who, say, well, Dr. Wood claims that she doesn't have a theory, but she has a theory that blah, 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 that is their theory they're projecting onto me.
Yep.
Find out in my book, where's the theory?
Yep.
I still don't know. You need to check on your book. It's still sitting in the, I bet you the customs folks, where you are, I haven't read this book yet, so that's in their slow readers. So that's why it's been a week in customs.
Yeah, well, I'm waiting for it. I look forward to getting my hands on it.
As we were talking, I just checked, and it's still in customs. Nothing's changed, so it's been there a week.
But
some people can read it in 2 days.
Yeah, I plan. I think I will.
But they have to read it several times. But that's quite fast. It would take me a lot longer because I absorb every word. That's something. But it could have been one. Well, if they're not, if English isn't their first language, it might take them a week to read it. So maybe they'll start letting it out pretty soon.
Well, I hope so. I've looked at as much evidence as I can find, pretty much without the book, and I think when you read when you read what people have said about the book after reading it, you think, I need to read this book. This is a book that I need to get my hands on.
There's many people who say, well, I've seen her website and I've seen her presentations. Yep. In this internet age of needing to be spoon fed, they don't realize they don't even get a hundredth of the information that way.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone wants a YouTube video. Everyone wants a video on YouTube that will tell them everything.
And that is beside the point, because they want to be spoon-fed. They want YouTube to think for them. And the whole point of this is we need to think for ourselves. How do we get in this position to begin with this official story business you know, whatever official story it is, people want to be told what their thoughts are. They want to be told it was thermite, whatever it is,
yeah.
or it was Bin Laden, or it was, you know, yeah. HAARP, or it was scalar beams from outer space, or whatever they want to project onto it, and you can't solve a problem that way. It doesn't work.
No.
You can only cover up.
As soon as you get an answer, you go, oh, that's what it is. I'm happy. And if you're not happy with that answer and you start questioning that answer, they've already planted the safety net. Oh, it's okay, we'll catch you. It's okay, we've got another story already planted ready for you. If it is,
yeah,
oh,
they have a second net that they get caught by. I call it the lie behind door number two.
Yeah, and they've even got a third net to actually catch you again. So, and then
in case you climb out of that one, they have one right below that to catch you.
And then they've got agents, and then they've got you putting out the truth so people can actually find out what happened, and then they've got agents trying to discredit you. So,
well, I wouldn't identify them as agents, because you get people who are believers. You know, they're out there promoting whatever it is in their pamphlets, just like people promoting the second coming of Christ or something.
No, I'm talking about someone who I know has read your book, and then they are out there putting out disinformation, and it's like,
I don't know what their motive is. Yeah, I'm not going to speculate on what their motive is, but what I'll say is they know better.
Yeah, they should know better. Absolutely.
And instead of you know pointing fingers and name calling of they're a Zionist or they're an agent or whatever group that you want to hold them accountable to, what I think of is that famous quote, you know, lead, follower, get out of the way. We have leaders, we have followers, and we have those who are in the way. Those who have read my book and then say, oh, she says such and she has a theory about a laser beam from space, they're in the way. They're in that category. They're not leading. They're not following. They're in the way. They're putting out disinformation.
Yeah, but I think what they're doing is, I think they've been trained by one of the nets, like Stephen Jones is the guy behind the space beams theory. So you know he puts that out.
He promotes space beams.
Yes, he does. But he projects it.
You haven't heard me talk about space beams at a conference, have you? I don't stand up front of an audience. So
no, absolutely not.
It's what Stephen Jones has promoted. There's a guy on another radio show I recently heard who brought up, oh, these people who talk about space beams are discrediting the truth movement. And isn't that horrible? They talk about space beams. Well, why is he talking about space beams? Does he want to discredit the movement? That's what he's telling us. He's telling us he is one of these people who talks about space beams to discredit the movement.
Yeah.
If it discredits the movement, why are you talking about it, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the guy that behind it. You know, this is what they do. You've got the truth. They'll you hear them on interviews, and then someone will say something like, someone stands up and questions them from a memory audience. Well, what about the building turning into dust? And they'll say, what, you said vaporize? Oh, well, and then they start addressing the word vaporize. It's like, no, 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 no.
They couldn't have vaporized. It's impossible to vaporize because we had Greg Jenkins make calculations for us. It would take more than five times the Earth's energy to turn the buildings to dust. Or, no, to do whatever he's saying that got done to him.
Vaporize, absolutely. So they'll take away the question, twist this question around into something that they want to answer, and miss the actual question.
But without lying, without explicitly lying, because they can't get hauled into court for libel or for slander. It's a hazy line there now, videos get published online and get seen over and over again, and they're now being seen as libel. So it's not just what you say. You know, it would be slander just to say it from one to another, but when it gets published online, then it's libel. But anyway, you know, they want to avoid that. So what they do is misinterpret what they heard someone say. Oh, you say the buildings did what? Vaporized?
Yeah, this is what they do. And speaking
about
court law,
they pretend they just innocently misunderstood.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do it. That's what they do. They'll
you say evidence, and they'll say, oh, theory. And they'll, then they'll start addressing
theory. Yeah, she had a theory. Oh, she just used the wrong word. Yeah, it was theory. But this it's not, thing.
It's not,
I think we have somebody else here now. Maybe he can chime in here.
Andrew Johnson, welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody. I assume you're talking about this alleged court action that AE-911 lies are going
to start. Oh, we haven't gotten to that one yet, but we could do that. We're talking about... I was warming up to the thing about was on Coast to Coast last night. The George saying that I have a theory about a pulsed weapon. I've never, ever said anything about a pulsed weapon except, you know, repeating what Nori says. And then Alex Jones is saying, oh, it's a laser beam she's talking about, or she has a theory about a laser beam or a maser beam or some kind of beam. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he had several different kinds of beams that he was putting in there. And so he's even disagreeing what my theory is from what Nori says my theory is. They don't even have a coherent story.
And That's right.
And so what I would like to ask Nori is, how do you cover up evidence, irrefutable evidence? How do you cover it up? You call it a theory.
Yep.
So is that what you're doing, sir?
I think it's, you know, the problem is details, or rather that's one of the problems, that people don't bother to report the details accurately. And so, you know, when people are sloppy with the details, they get away with it. They're rarely picked up on it or rarely corrected. So, you know, actually,
because they're going to say, oh, it's an accidental mistake. And like if it went to court, you know, for slander or libel, that they'd say, oh, that was just an accidental mistake. I just misstated something. But there's so much misstating.
Yeah,
that's not an honest mistake after a while, but they get away with it because it would appear that way. If it went in front of a jury would say, yeah, that's a, you know, whatever. So it's whatever you can get away with is what they're up to. But there's no they can't cite anywhere where I've presented a theory, you know, or even we have Mr. Fetzer who decides my word evidence means theory on the cover of my book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you been on the show with George Nori?
You asking me or?
Yeah, Dr. Wood. Yeah, have you been on the show
Nori? Oh, yeah, twice. Most
so he should know better then.
Right. He should know better. He says several times, but it's twice. Once in 2011, my book first came out, and he has my book. So does his producer. He has my book.
He also said that in that particular clip, I don't know whether you played it earlier on.
Didn't play it on this show.
George Nori actually said, oh, I know she's not going to like me calling it a theory. I mean, maybe that weren't the exact words, but...
He says, I don't have a theory. He mocks me.
Something like that, yes. And so he perfectly well knows that, you know...
He's incorrect.
He knows what he's doing, but yet he's still doing it. He doesn't really see.
And he's not a scientist.
No.
So how is he, you know, judging and ruling over a scientist? But that's then the strange thing that happens in this community.
But it's not, by and large, it's not a community that's got a high concentration of scientists in it. That's one observation I've come to.
And I can see why. It's you throw your hands up and walk off because it's so insane. You know, I think therefore I am. You know, the Fetzering, you know, definition in the Urban Dictionary. I think I'm right, so therefore I am.
Indeed.
Oh dear, there's too much of that going on. But we've mentioned a lot about court cases a minute. Yeah. Evidence. Shall we? Can we go through some of the court cases then?
The latest is a couple of – they always have different ones going on because of this issue that I'm the only one who's submitted a federal QI-TAM case about the destruction of the buildings. And Morgan Reynolds submitted one about the assumption, the false assumption they made of we think there are planes, so therefore there were planes. That's what his issue is about. But mine was on the fraudulent report about the demise of the buildings. And no one can refute what I presented. They dismissed the court case basically because there were only a handful of supporters, two of which are, you know, right here on your show. That's a problem, I think, for those trying to cover it up, because they haven't submitted a court case, but they want to make people think that they have. Like when I submitted my request for corrections to NIST, that was my first action. That was March 16th, 2007. 3.5 weeks after that is when Richard Gage's website went up, and then they, along with Stephen Jones, submitted a request for corrections to NIST. But theirs didn't include any thermite. But if they hadn't submitted one, they would look like they weren't doing anything, and Dr. Wood was the only one doing anything. And I think they're still fighting that battle, but they can't afford to do anything.
They very rarely talk about that submission. In fact, I don't think I've ever heard them talk about it, thinking about it. You know, they very rarely say, well... No.
It didn't work for them because of your video on it.
Well, possibly, yeah. Possibly. But I think they had to be very careful because it's clear that they... It's clear to me, at least.
It's a federal crime to defraud the government.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing. So to anyone that actually read their document and read their website, they would know that they were acting dishonestly and, you know, and therefore that they were just going through the motions with that submission and not really, there was no meaning to it, really.
To beat pots and pans to drive people away from looking at what I was presenting.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, do you remember what happened when you wrote the press release, right, you know, announcing that I had submitted this and making noise about it? You remember what happened right a few minutes later? Well, actually, you know, within a few hours, Stephen Jones announces new whistleblower come forth with the floor plans of the World Trade Center.
I don't remember the timing of that. I must.
It was within a day. It was, you know, a matter of hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now we can finally figure out what happened, because we now have this whistleblower that came forth, and all this hoopla went rippling through the truther community to rally behind it, so they weren't looking anywhere else. They're looking for, where can I download the floor plans? Well, they call it the blueprints, but it was blueprints for truth. That's where that was coming from.
Yeah.
And it was really just the floor plans. Yeah. But they present them as the blueprints.
What was the outcome of their court case? Did they get thrown out?
They didn't have a court case. Back then. So, but they're trying to give the impression they have a court case. So they had this NYC CAN thing. They were getting everybody's signatures on it. So what that does is get people to sign on. Once you've signed on, you're more invested, and you want to see something go forward. You want to be on the winning team, right? So you're not going to abandon something. So they're collecting signatures to get, you know, see how many people we have. And I think it was to get something on the ballot, to vote for something, to maybe think about doing something about getting a new investigation. But there was nothing about any evidence.
No, nothing.
It was just about do they have enough legitimate signatures to get something put on a pass inspection and get put on the ballot, and it failed inspection, so they went out and got more signatures. And then they still didn't have enough signatures, and so they were taking it to court saying, we do too have enough signatures, and back and forth. It was nothing to do with the buildings.
Okay.
And then finally they decided to abandon that. Now they have a new one. They're passing the hat and wanting people to donate. They don't have enough money to get a lawyer to do a FOIA request. And so they're passing the hat for – they need to come up with $8,000. Well, they have, what, $640,000 ad campaign? They came up with that money overnight to put big electronic billboards on Times Square. So I want them to get – you know, they don't have a problem getting money.
No, they don't.
And
I think I read somewhere that they made $2 million between –
There's 2008 to now. But, you know, that's above the table. You don't know how much they have below the table.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, what is their objective? And they say they need to hire a lawyer. That's what the $8,000 is for. A.E. Nylam Truth has how many lawyers in it?
There's at least one we know of. But...
Yeah, James Gourley, who's you know, written hit pieces about my work, distortions of my work. And before Richard Gage said he couldn't submit a legal case because he's not a lawyer. Well, I'm not a lawyer.
No.
Exactly.
So how exactly did they throw your case out? What were the wording?
They didn't throw it out. They didn't throw it out. They dismissed it. That's throw out is a kind of a derogatory term, as though it's nonsense, and it was not nonsense. They acknowledged that the law applied to my case, but in order to dismiss the case, they had to ignore the law. I am speculating, but I think it's pretty good, easy speculation there. They didn't state it, but I think it's pretty clear that if there's only five people who support the case, if it goes forward, the defendants are members of the military-industrial complex. And so there's only five people who support the case. What's going to happen to the judges if they – you know, let this case go forward? Are they going to get justified on the way home from work that day? That won't help. Oh. That won't solve it.
I mean, to mention the order of things, what happened was it went initially into the court of the Southern District of New York, SDNY, and the judge for that initial submission was George Daniels, was it, I think?
Yeah.
That was his name, wasn't it? And you can read the ruling that he wrote, because there were actually three submissions at the same time. There was Dr.
No, they were at the same time. There were Morgan's was submitted more than a month after mine.
Six weeks
after mine.
So did they rule on them at the same time, though?
They did. They ruled on them at the same time. They weren't submitted at the same time, but they ruled on them at the same time.
Yes. Okay, so that's maybe what I should have clarified. So they ruled on them at the same time.
They ruled on them in one document. Yeah, they used one document.
One single document. I think they just copy and pasted the details of the plaintiff at the top of the case, pretty much, didn't they?
Yep. I was kind of criticized for not having any evidence of no planes, but that wasn't an issue in my case. And I was also criticized for saying that the military did it. I was also criticized for saying I didn't have proof that bombs did it. Well, that wasn't my issue. That was Haas's issue about bombs in the building. And his issue was about Building 7.
Nobody will know who Haas is, so we have to explain that. And that was the three cases that were submitted. The three key term actions that were submitted were Morgan Reynolds, which primarily focused. Yeah, and then there was Ed Haas, who had a website called muckrakerreport.com.
His was not a key term case.
Okay.
His was just saying he didn't want, he was warning NIST not to commit fraud by issuing a report about Building 7 because he suspect they're going to, you know, commit fraud.
Okay.
It was something like that, and it was to stop action, and it was so it was a totally different type of thing.
Oh, I see, and which even makes the ruling even more unusual than that they should use the same ruling for that case as well, or the same document,
exactly.
Even though it was a different action.
A different building. It was the only thing in common was that it was an event that happened. The original event happened on 9/11. That's the only thing in common.
And the thing that stood out in my memory of that was if you read the ruling, it mentions that something along the lines of, I'd have to go and get the actual document. I don't know if I've got it to hand now, but the document mentions the moon landings and JFK.
Oh, right. Yeah. And my thing, it says he's not going to hear a case about who shot JFK or what landed on the moon. That's not the exact words, but it's pretty close. Yeah, and it wasn't what the case was about. He must have misunderstood my case when he read it, assuming he read it.
So you appealed and went forward. Did the other people appeal there?
But there's another thing. The lower court also said that, you know, I didn't have a whistleblower status because he decided he wasn't going to read my whistleblower report, which was the request for corrections to NIST. He decided to just omit mentioning that so then he could say I wasn't a whistleblower if he didn't mention my act of whistleblowing. And so that was another issue he did. And to qualify for a QTAM case, you have to be the first whistleblower about this issue, and you have to show there was fraud. Well, that's pretty clear. But what was happening is that the courts were, you know, misapplying the law or misinterpreting the law, and it was getting spinning so far out of control that they were saying, well, you had to show premeditated intent to commit fraud, and exactly where they were standing, exactly where the minute hand was in the clock when they were, you know, pre-planning to, you know, what was in their mind at the time. It's something you couldn't possibly do. It was ridiculous. And this was around the time they were doing all these bailouts in Congress, and Congress wanted to put a way to, you know, track and keep fraud from happening and allow whistleblowers to come forward. And so they did a restatement of what the intention of that original law was. They called this the Fraud Enforcement Recovery Act, which was a restatement of the original thing the person coming forth, the whistleblower, just needed to show that they were a whistleblower, the first one. I'm still the only one about, you know, the issue I brought forth, and that fraud was committed. And well, NIST helped me out there. They even wrote that they didn't do what Congress asked them to do. But then the judges decided they were going to ignore that. They acknowledged that it applied to my case, but they were ignoring it. So you can dismiss the case.
But then you appealed, didn't you? And you went higher up.
Yeah, this was in the appeal level.
Oh, okay.
The lower case, it was just you know, nonsense stuff. And I was the only one to appeal so that they couldn't be distracted by lumping it in with these other ones again. That's why the other ones, the other two.
Yeah, I think my connection dropped out when I was talking about the Daniels, the first ruling.
Okay.
And then by the time my connection came back on, you'd moved on to the later points. And so that ruling then, as you know, as Dr. Wood has gone on to say, was then was appealed, and within that ruling, there was a hearing for the appeal, wasn't there? Which was
eight minutes long. So there's not much you can say in that 8 minutes.
Was on the 26th of June, was it? Was it June 2009, wasn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Was it the 26th or the 21st? I can't remember.
23rd, maybe? 23rd or...
Yeah. Round about then.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there was a physical, you know, face-to-face 8-minute hearing, because you had some boards made up, didn't you, that you took into the courtroom?
Yeah, and then they wouldn't allow them. They wouldn't allow them.
Oh, okay. Right. You had them made up with the intention of taking them in, though, didn't you?
Right, and then it was 1 hour before our start time, they said, you can't bring them in.
Oh, really?
It changed then. So I had them made up, and we're in Jerry's office ready to go down there. And, you know, when we came in, he said, oh, we just hung up the phone talking with somebody. They said we can't do it.
Wow. I don't remember you telling me that.
Yeah, so we didn't get to have any evidence brought in. But that was it. But when we appealed the first decision, we didn't – it was just my case that got appealed, so that they couldn't get distracted by anything else. And still, at that 8-minute thing, the opposition was trying to bring the airplanes back into it. My case had nothing to do with airplanes. She has no evidence that there were no – they're trying to argue Morgan's case in mind and deliberately mix them in. And I think it was even in their write-up about it too.
Yes, so they did not want to discuss that evidence that was in your case. I mean, that was a big no-no.
And also, on the defense side of it, they're saying, well, you know, Dr. So-and-so, who has a PhD in engineering, and then we have little Ms. Judy over here. they're playing that game. That's pretty idiotic.
So what were the evidence that you what in your court case? What was it? You had Morgan Reynolds doing the no planes. You had the Building 7. What was its name again?
It has nothing to do with my case.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how it came to be, put into place at around the same time. I don't know how that happened, but Ed Haas. I'll type it in the chat window.
HAAS. He surfaced.
Yes, and he seems to have disappeared without a trace ever since. I've not heard much about him since.
So he would have just muddying waters then, really? Because I've never heard of this guy's court case.
Yeah, it was just, he's in, he's down. But...
Okay, there's another court case I want to get to. Wait, 1 second.
But the point being that the judges acknowledge, this is respectful of me, they acknowledge they're ignoring the law to dismiss the case. But do you blame them? Do you blame them? Because nothing would have been accomplished if the thing had gone forward if there's no supporters of the case. Because if there's no supporters of the case, that means you just justified the judges and the case is gone. And justify
backlash.
Right. If there's only five people who care about this case, it's controllable. But if we had 100,000 or even 50,000 people out there, or 2,000 people out there in the street outside the courtroom, were making a lot of noise about this, they couldn't have swept it under the carpet. We'd have a different scenario. So
your court case was that NIST contractors hadn't done their job that they've been paid to do.
They also committed fraud. And an example I like to give is like Underwriters Lab. They made two half-scale floor spans, mock-up floor spans, and two full-scale mock-up floor spans. And they cooked them. They set them on fire. And to see, when they'd failed to support load, and they did, they cooked them for twice as long at twice the temperature Fahrenheit, and they didn't fail. They couldn't get them to fail, so they had to call the test after several hours, and so. But then they signed off on a report saying that fire did it. That's fraud. When they could not get their floor spans to fail due to fire.
Right. Absolutely. And they were.
The list of. There's a whole bunch of things like this where they knew better, and it was this game that the court system had been playing. But the FERA Act was what Congress did to bring it back to the original intent of law. It's not a new law. It was the original intent of the law. They were restating the original intent so that they could have whistleblowers who could have accountability for the bailouts. And every case that was still pending as of the date that was passed was covered, and that included my case. And the courts decided they're going to ignore that and go back to being able to claim that you need to know, prove premeditation, where the person was standing and what their thoughts were, and whatever details. And specifically, this example that I use is, let's say you have a contract for a mathematician to sharpen pencils for everybody. The best mathematician in the world, is on the NIST report. This is hypothetical. It's on the NIST report to sharpen pencils for everybody. That's what's in his contract, sharpen pencils. But then he sees that somebody has added 2 plus 2 and got 9. But he isn't going to point that out, that they have errors there, because he's paid to sharpen pencils, even though he knows that this is a fraudulent report going forth. And so the way the law was being interpreted before was that, well, if he didn't sharpen his pencils correctly, that's the only thing you can say was fraudulent, rather than he knows the report's fraudulent and he signed off on it. And so the original intent of the law was that if he knowingly allowed fraudulent report to go forward, it doesn't matter what his contract was for, he's committing fraud, and that's, that's fraud. And so to show, for example, Underwriters Lab signed off on report saying fire did it, and they could not get fire to do it. So they knew fire didn't do it. It doesn't matter that their report, that their contract said they were just a sharp pencils. And I think that was, kind of a cover that they were giving the contractors. Like, for example, SAIC, Science Application International Corporation, on their contract, I think they're to have a typist typing in the equations into Microsoft Word. Well, what they're doing is preparing the report, and you know what their area of expertise is? PsyOps. Oh, but they're just typists typing in equations on the report, as though that would protect them from being involved in doing PsyOps. You know, they would knowingly be putting forth a fraudulent report. But, the protection they were given is this loophole, and FERA closed that loophole. But the judges dismissed the case, decided they wanted to use the loophole anyway, so they had to ignore the law in order to use the loophole.
Okay, we're coming up to a break now, so we'll be back in a few minutes.
Listening to the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it.
ShakeAndWakeRadio.com.
welcome back to Red Pill Raw Truth. We're discussing the court cases of 9/11, and where do we get to? We can continue from where we left off.
Yeah, we're talking about the appeal and how it was decided that, you know, this is an appeal for should it be dismissed or not. Now, remember, the defendants are the military, many members of the military-industrial complex. And you have five supporters of this case. What do you think the judges want to do? But the judges were respectful. This is the Court of Appeals. They were respectful. They acknowledged the law applied to my case, but they're ignoring the law in order to dismiss the case. That's respectful. And if this case had gone forward, if there was enough support for this case and it had gone forward and they couldn't ignore it, then we move to discovery. We can put people under oath. Isn't that what the truthers wanted? Put people under oath? And what one of the first people to put under oath, of course, is somebody from ARA who, you know, their company are manufacturers and developers of energy weapons. They also have a contract to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that exists or is being developed anywhere. So not only can they identify what weapon it is, they very, very likely know whose weapon it was that was used. That's the closest anyone could ever possibly hope to get in this. I'm not going on speculation. That's, you know, the people who know who did it would be right there on the witness stand. You can't get Absolutely. Any better than that. So you can
so by
see
doing
why.
Things in right order, yeah, so by doing things in right order, you get so you without knowing who did it, you end up getting the people who did it by
right.
by following the procedure, if you know what I mean.
So, but without support for this case,
yep.
You know, so who in whose interest was it to keep truthers from knowing about this case?
Well, the perpetrators, the people who were behind the technology that did it.
Or behind the plan for whatever's, you know, the people who want to keep the cover-up in place, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Because it would end the cover-up.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's the best way to put it. If my case had gone forward, it would be an end to the cover-up.
Yeah.
So
the architects and engineers for truth, they're asking for what you gave them, and they... And,
they covered
you
know, it up.
They just covered it up.
They covered up my case. If it seems like that, I do know that people who brought my case forth, you know, to Richard Gage were banned from Gage's group. They emailed Gage about the case, and then they got banned for it. There's several of those instances because they didn't want other people. He didn't want it to these people to contaminate, you know, the ignorant group of people who just didn't know about the case.
Yeah. Well, anybody who brings your work to like Gage gets banned, don't they?
Yeah. I'd like to just mention here that the reason, you know, I was talking about this last night at a talk I gave in Hull in the UK, and somebody asked the question, well, why don't you want this, you know, about 9/11 to be revealed? Why are the architects and engineers group covering up what happened on 9/11? This is what they couldn't understand. And my answer to them was the fundamental thing which needs to be covered up by the people that are doing the covering up is the connection between energy and 9/11 and the fact that this energy technology, you know, whatever name you give to it, we know that it involves energy and the control of energy, the direction of energy. That has to be covered up. And whatever way they can cover it up, that's kind of secondary, really. You know, they can set up a group, you know, to talk about thermite or nanothermite, you know, and they can give them, that group, a few million dollars to keep their operation going by sending these people on 30-day tours of various cities.
To collect anybody else who's fallen out of the first net.
Exactly. But the primary goal is to keep the connection between what happened at the World Trade Center and possibly the other sites as well, but definitely at the World Trade Center, the energy weapons were involved, and that technology could have other uses. And it has a history which is somehow, in some way, shape or form, connected to what the scientists Pons and Fleischmann discovered in their process, which was then badly named as cold fusion.
In simple terms,
if people are having trouble following all the details and the ins and outs of the court case and whatnot, which is, you know, is sort of it's a long story basically. Yeah. Then, if I can just explain to people that the reason for all of that being covered up is to do with energy, really.
I would like to add to that. Okay, it wasn't Bin Laden running airplanes into the building. It was Bin Laden's crew putting bombs in the building. Everything else is exactly the same in the story after that.
Yes, yes.
You know, so it doesn't matter which of those stories, but if it's, you know, something to do with energy, a different type of technology, that's a whole different animal altogether.
Yes, and then, of course, the other things that have to be covered up. I mean, you know, we've had discussions, I think Matthew may have even talked about it a little bit, just a little bit in the first program that we did. And that, I think, is why the Stephen E. Jones character has kind of gone into the background quite a lot. He's occasionally sort of stuck
surfaces.
His head up.
Yeah, but he watches daily. He watches it.
He does appear to be watching things. And so by about 2007,
whoops, I dropped out.
Hello.
Knowledge then, and it had grown a little bit.
Yeah, I heard you say about by 2007, then it went off after that. I got disconnected after that.
I think you dropped.
Oh, did I?
So,
I was saying that Stephen E. Jones was sort of fairly prominent in 2006, and then in 2007, you know, he seemed to sort of fade out of the picture a little bit around the time these court cases were.
Well, it was also, it's like he handed the baton over to Richard Gage. I saw that at that time. That's what it looked like. And Gage, not being a scientist, doesn't have to answer scientific questions.
Yes, yes. So that was a clear kind of change of mode of the cover-up, which has continued since that time. And I think, as Dr. Wood said, Gage he can basically pretty much say more or less what he likes, as long as he's got the right sort of language and the right presentation to rope people in, and as long as he is being skeptical of the official account of what happened on, you know, on 9/11 and mainly at the World Trade Center, then he can get away with pretty much anything. He can give them any story that has vague plausibility to it. And, you know, the way the cover-up works.
Yeah, as I've been saying to Matthew, that they need it to be organic. But they just need to make a little adjustment on this side, over here, over there. So, yeah, Jones got it off and running in a particular direction, then sat back. And then if it needs adjustment, he might poke it here or there. But he doesn't have a hands-on part of it. And I think that's kind of the way it goes. So if people feel like they're participating, they brought this, like David Chandler, you know, arguing about, well, this fall of whatever. But if he starts going off onto those flying pieces trailing dust and doesn't say, oh, that's evidence of thermite, he's not going to be their poster boy. So he's going to say what they want him to say. You know, he's given a leeway within the margins. So that he can say things that aren't too damaging for keeping the energy issue out of it.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, a lot of people don't notice these details and inconsistencies, you know, because they don't study it closely enough, or they don't have an analytical background, so they don't see this kind of organic process, you know, and how it changes. The other thing which I think seems to have been happening in the last couple of years is that the role of this Veterans Today website seems to have kind of increased a little bit. And I'm basically judging that on the number of people that I've seen reposting the Veterans Today articles, or sending them me on by email, or, you know, reposting them on Facebook. And they, of course, are not really thermite-oriented, although you will find articles about thermite on there. They've been quite heavily promoting this Fetzer's nuke, you know, nonsense.
Mini micro nano nukes.
Yeah, and the various flavors of that. So again,
we're coming up to spray on nukes soon.
So again, as long as it doesn't make the connection to an energy process, you know, which involves some type of nuclear process as well, as long as these connections are kept out of the picture, they can get away with that as well, and they're quite happy if they can convince people that nuclear devices were involved. And you know, they don't really care, for example, whether these stories are inconsistent between mini, micro, you know, nano, or pre-planted in the building when they were constructed, you know, and this sort of thing. That's not really important, as long as they keep people away from the knowledge of tritium and cold fusion and so forth.
It's also interesting. Yeah, Fetzer will mention tritium, but only to bash me, claiming I ignore it,
yes.
Which is not true at all. To me, it's a red flag of something. But you know, one thing that becomes quite clear to anyone who starts looking at this is the nukers don't attack the mini nukers. You know, they don't try to destroy them. They'll do some, you know, slight name calling to make it look good, but they're best buddies. And the mini nukers don't, you know, destroy the thermite folks. And the thermite folks don't destroy, you know, all of those folks are all, you know, buddies together. One thing is clear. They all are very, very harsh about Dr. Wood.
Yeah, it's like WWF wrestlers.
Almost, yeah.
That's a beautiful analogy. It's
all staged as well, so that is a good analogy,
yeah.
Because a lot of that was staged, wasn't it?
Yeah. But they don't do stuff like put out false stories saying, you know, whatever. You can fill in the blanks. I'm not even going to give them airtime. But there's, you know, like there's this one particular article on Veterans Today called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And it's nothing but character assassination, full force, pulling out all the stops. You don't see anything like that against any other, you know, person looking into 9/11.
Yeah.
No.
And it's something I've been looking into more recently. This is a little bit of a tangent, but is journalistic integrity in the mainstream, and the standards people are brought to. You know, they may not talk about certain things, but they don't put out, you know, super lies. They'd be held accountable. They'd be hung out to dry if they put out fake stories. And I was looking into what?
You're talking mainstream here.
Mainstream media would be hung out to dry, and they have. There's been some just a few cases over history where it found out that the people didn't have source information; they made it up. And those people were destroyed. Their reputation for life was destroyed. And there's one guy who was who did something in the late 90s, and just earlier this year he'd taken his case to the California Supreme Court because they weren't allowing him to get a lawyer's license, even though he graduated the top of his class from law school, he passed the bar exam with flying colors, but they wouldn't let him be a lawyer because he lacked integrity, because he put out these fake stories. And speaking of, that wasn't the Jason Blair guy, but the other one, Stephen Glass. And he said, you know, he's just rotten to the core. No hope for him. And apply that to veterans today. Man, it's just night and day. I mean, and it's clear there's absolutely no accountability. If people make statements and there's no backing it up, you know, there's absolutely nothing behind it. And so there's no standards whatsoever. But anyway, yeah, you're talking about the court cases. So they have to make it seem like there's court cases because Dr. Wood has a court case, and they don't want to look like they're not doing a court case.
So that brings on to April Gallup, and I want to go through her court case and the in detail if we can go through it in the time we've got left.
Sure.
Right, so I've got it in front of me. How did she start then? How did she, what's her background?
I don't know, exactly how it got started because she's just done several court cases, but I know about this most, the latest one. She was a worker in the Pentagon, and Andrew, be sure to, correct me if you have more details than I have, but just in general, she was a worker in the Pentagon. First day back from maternity leave, and her little baby doesn't have a security clearance yet. So you can't go to the nursery, so she's waiting to get paperwork for that. And so the baby's at her desk with her. And she goes to turn on her computer, and she pushes the start button on her computer. And just at that moment, there's a big explosion. She thought, oh, what'd I do? And that was the supposed plane. But she couldn't see anything because there's this opaque dust in the air. But she breathed. Anyway, she grabs her son and goes out through the hole in the building. And then she wants to sue somebody. Somebody's got to pay, And so she sues the airplane company for being planes or not planes. I don't remember. There's conflicting things. But this last case was about blaming George Bush and Dick Cheney. And then she had in that case, the way it was drafted, was thermite in the buildings, in the towers. But she wasn't in the towers. She was in the Pentagon. So it was just idiotic to say it, had anything to do with that. Of course, there's no evidence. And Stephen Jones did not sign an affidavit for her case. He pretended he did, but he did not submit a signed affidavit for her case. He told her she's, free to use his online paper. And David Ray Griffin.
I thought she submitted his book as evidence.
David Ray Griffin's book she put in there, she cited. And David Ray Griffin encouraged her. I saw, some emails from him to April Gallup. He was encouraging her to file this case, but none of them signed an affidavit. So it looked like she's a wacky conspiracy theorist just putting out nonsense stories, saying George Bush...
The only person, as I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, that submitted an affidavit from that crowd, there may have been other people that weren't part of what we might call the thermite crew, was the Danish chemist Niels Harrit. And Ralph...
He's not an American citizen.
Yeah. And if you read his affidavit, I haven't read it all and studied it in detail, but he more or less says, well, we think it might have been thermite that was used in the World Trade Center towers.
But we don't know if the thermite was down. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, we think we might have found evidence. It was very much a kind of ambiguous language, not very, they couldn't refer to a specific test that they'd done.
And even he states it on the Danish television that, I've got that clip on my website where he says, we don't even know if the thermite we found was thermite that was used. Now, we don't even agree what it was used for, if it was even used.
How much thermite did we need? Many, 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 many tons.
On this news broadcast, he said tons of thermite were used.
Many tons.
Yeah, did he say many?
He said many tons.
Many, yeah, he really goes for it.
So, but again, as Dr. Wood said, for them, whoever was handling that case from, the legal submission.
Veal, and then there's Cunningham, I think, was it? The other guy?
Gourley, was it?
No, Gourley wasn't there.
He wasn't involved with it, was he?
Veal, and then there was a question if he was even a lawyer. Apparently that came up,
I see. So, but anyway, as Dr. Wood said, just to emphasize that point, the April Gallup's case revolved around what happened to her at the Pentagon, not anything to do with, because she had nothing to do with the World Trade Center and didn't, so they, it was like they probably, this is just a guess, but they heard about her case and that she was going to try and,
you're breaking up.
Yeah, I'm losing you again. Hello?
Okay.
Hi there, you're back.
Reese. Bruce upstairs.
Okay.
Again, where did you lose me? What was I saying? I broke up.
I'm guessing you're about to say that she filed a case and they just piled on with this other junk.
Yeah, I think that was my impression that's they'd found out they were going to file a case. She was, and then they sort of tried to piggyback onto that, what they wanted to put in the they knew Maria was not Link.
Yeah, you're breaking up too much.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
I got a knot in there, and gone. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you can restart your...
The case is April Gallup versus Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Meyer.
Yeah, so it turned out to be nothing to do with the Pentagon. It was about, except she was saying they didn't protect her at the Pentagon. But here's what they did at the World Trade Center. So, she has no evidence of anything. It's all conspiracy theory, all speculation.
Absolutely.
Completely, 100%. It was all like, well, Cheney had to have known because, well, we know he knew. It was the truther story. So it really tested the truther story, but it got hung on April Gallup.
Yep.
And then they were saying something about I'm gonna say it a little bit mock it a little bit here, but that the judge, I don't know the exact connection, but something like the judge in the case was the cousin's uncle's brother, whatever, some long distance relative of Bush, and so therefore he needed to take himself off the case. And they listed a whole bunch of other stuff. They're very fixated on that rather than on any evidence.
Right, I'm looking at the article that Professor Stephen Jones wrote on the 28th of April, 2001. Can we help April Gallup in her court case?
Yeah, that was a 9/11 blogger. He posted that because it was dismissed, and then I think when they appealed it, they were essentially calling the judge names that he was a low life for this, that, and and how dare you? And it was very derogatory. And if you're going to have a judge hear your case, you don't do that to a judge. Even in my case, when my lawyer filed a motion for reconsideration after it was dismissed, it was like, oh, judge, about this, landing on the moon and whatnot. Perhaps you had a misapprehension of the case, just didn't read it correctly. Could you maybe try reading it again? It wasn't like you low life, whatever. That is guaranteed to, you're shooting yourself in the foot to say that to a judge. And I don't know if they called him four or five letter names, but it was essentially that in April Gallup's case, that the judges did that. And, the lawyers did that. And there was three lawyers mentioned, and one of them had nothing to do with it. They just put his name on it. So they let him off the hook. And it was these other two that they're talking about getting them disbarred for having done this. And so they fined them $15,000 for the court's time. We just wasted the court's time in filing such a case. Just name-calling of the judge. No evidence. They were told they had no evidence, and instead of coming up with evidence, they came up with name-calling.
Yeah.
Essentially.
So they tried to submit in Thermite, and if Stephen Jones was behind Thermite, he could have submitted an affidavit to back her up, but he didn't.
Right, and then with this, if the lawyer doesn't pay the fine, the $15,000 fine, then April Gallup has to pay it. Is what it was. They're individually, accountable for that, or jointly. And so here she is getting really slammed, and Stephen Jones posts this thing, like, poor April Gallup, is anything we can do to help her? Jones isn't saying, let me read it out,
and you can jump in anytime you want to make a point. I heard April Gallup, this is Stephen Jones' article. I heard April Gallup speak a few years ago and had the opportunity to talk with her when we were both participating in a conference in Irvine, California. April was in the Pentagon with her infant son on September 11th, 2001, when the devastation occurred. There was no warning. But we know from Secretary of Transport Norman Mineta's testimony that Dick Cheney were following the progress of the jet as it came in towards the Pentagon. 50 miles out, 30 miles an hour, etc. There was no warning to April Gallup or her co-workers in the Pentagon, and the jet was not intercepted. See articles of in the Journal of 911 Studies. So
he's wanting people to assume there was a plane, and he's making, it's a magician's trick, getting people to say as though that's confirmed that there's a plane coming in, and they should have warned April Gallup.
Yeah,
that's what he's painting out, that she was about to hit by this incoming plane. That's what he's left the reader to assume that's confirmed. But the Norm Mineta story is obviously bogus. because you know, 580 miles an hour, that's approximately 600 miles an hour. For easy math, let's just round up to 600. And that means it's 10 miles a minute. So the plane's 50 miles out. Now it's 30 miles out. Well, that's 120 seconds between those two data points. So if the if the young officer is running in from the radar room, having a conversation with Cheney, and then running back out the door and down the hall to his radar room, then back to ask Cheney, there's not enough time. How fast can the kid run? You know, if he talked nonstop to Cheney and didn't get any additional data, you know, still, it would take 2 minutes to carry on that conversation that is described. So obviously the story is bogus, but it gets people to assume there's a plane.
But Professor Stephen Jones should know this because he's a professor. He's, this can't be an accident. It can't be an oversight.
He teaches freshman physics.
Yeah. Right, we'll over 100 died in the Pentagon disaster. April suffered physical injury from the blast and had filed a lawsuit charging Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Meyer and others. She deserves to be heard, but her case has been dismissed by Judge Demny Chin of United States District Court for Southern District of New York and is now in appeal status before the Circuit Court in Connecticut. Can we do something to help April Gallup in her quest for justice and a fair hearing?
Why isn't Stephen Jones doing something? If he is proof of something, why isn't he doing something?
Because he's a leader. He just sends, he just puts out the word and he wants other people to do the...
To get their hands dirty.
Yep. Did he get fined $15,000 for submitting this court case? Absolutely not.
He didn't even, that's why he didn't file an affidavit in the case.
Yeah.
But he led people to believe that he had.
Yeah.
I think, Andrew, you know more about that with Ralph Winterowd corresponding with Stephen Jones. Hello? Is Andrew there?
Hi.
Hi. You know about that.
I'm back now. Should be.
Oh, okay. Ralph Winterowd had corresponded with Stephen Jones asking him where his affidavit is because he implies he has an affidavit. But there isn't any. And Ralph downloaded the court case from the PACER system, and there's no affidavit for Stephen Jones, yet he states that, you know, on Nylon Blogger that he filed a court case. I mean, they filed an affidavit in the court case where he didn't. But then he comes up. Yeah, you go ahead and tell the story.
I don't remember all of that story, so you obviously remember it better than I do. I do remember, you know, Ralph telling us, but I don't remember the details.
He had sent me his responses from Stephen Jones that it's clear that Stephen Jones did not file an affidavit for the case. There's not on record. There's no mention. You know, the numbers are consecutive of the documents that get filed, but Stephen Jones likes to imply off the record that he submitted one, but he did not submit an affidavit in the case. But then here it is when April Gallup gets fined for the bogus appeal, which wasn't, you know, it was told that, you know, she could then, you know, after they're dismissing the case, or when they're dismissing the case, they said, well, you don't have any evidence here. We'll let you submit evidence if you can go round some up and bring them to us. And she didn't. And then so they did dismiss the case, and now they're appealing it. They appealed it without any additional evidence. And the judges said, we need evidence. And
It says reasons for dismissal of Gallup versus Cheney. Plaintiff cannot cure their deficient complaint with affidavits. Note, plaintiff has recently tendered sworn statements, i.e. affidavits, from two men who have published a lot of evidence about 9/11 fakery. About the fakery of 9/11. Namely, theologian Ray Griffin and physics professor Stephen Jones.
There were no
affidavits, but Stephen Jones is writing in this article. It makes it look like it's him and Ray Griffin.
Yep.
What
they did was she submitted his paper in it, not an affidavit. I think she submitted his paper, something she could find online, and David Ray Griffin's book. But that doesn't... You know, she's supposed to be, kind of a whistleblower about being a victim there. And it has nothing to do with what David Ray Griffin is theorizing.
So in other words, if the judge were or other people reviewing the documents in that case, they would have to read the whole of David Ray Griffin's book, and they'd
and
have to read Stephen Jones's paper, you know. But that didn't directly address. Yeah, that didn't directly address April Gallup's case, because the book wasn't about April Gallup's situation in the Pentagon exactly. It didn't. I don't know if it referred to her, but you know, they would have needed to submit an affidavit that what they were writing was true and applicable to what happened to April Gallup and why. You know, that would have been surely what you would do in an affidavit.
Sworn under oath. Yeah, sworn under oath
that this was true, because when you submit an affidavit, you're then, if you are found to be not telling the truth, when, you know, you're put under cross-examination, then you could be either fined or sent to prison for that. So they weren't putting themselves into that. This is David Ray Griffin and Stephen E. Jones. They were not putting themselves into that situation. In other words, they weren't standing by what they said was true. Now, going back to Dr. Wood's case, I wasn't at the World Trade Center when 9/11 happened, and I wasn't, I'm not a qualified scientist like Dr. Wood is, but I did nevertheless submit an affidavit, because I felt that if I was to be called as some kind of witness or something in that court case, I wanted to make sure that the people involved, you know, with the case knew that I was serious about what I was saying, and that to the best of my knowledge, everything I'd said about it was true. You know, so I was, when I think Jerry Leapart suggested that I submit an affidavit, I can't remember, I think he suggested it, but I honestly can't remember the written, it was me that suggested it, but he agreed to it, but, you know, whatever the way around it was done. And I had no qualms about doing that. I was absolutely, you know, totally committed to doing that. You know,
and John Hutchison submitted one too.
Correct, yeah. So these people that say that John is a fraudster, then it's a very strange thing to do, to submit an affidavit in a court case. You know,
and Stephen Jones would not do such a thing.
Right, and he didn't. So again, what does that tell people when they study these details? But it's easy in these talk shows to kind of gloss over these sorts of details.
Because they're entertainment. They're not not sworn testimony.
Yes, yes. And that's the difference. So, you know, this is the difference between theorizing and actually presenting real evidence in, you know, the real world, as it were, where you're actually trying to solve a case or reopen a case or further the understanding using legal means, you know, getting documents revealed, putting people under oath, you know, holding people accountable for what they've done. You know, in the case of those contractors that work for Nest, at least, that's the difference. Yep.
I submitted evidence in my case. Mm-hmm. I was not sanctioned, fined. You know, sanctioned is a, you know, kind of fine or punishment by the courts. I was not sanctioned for filing a frivolous case because I did not file. It wasn't seen that I filed a frivolous case. I had evidence to support what I put forward. April Gallup's case, they put forward conspiracy theories, not evidence.
Yeah. Further down the article, it says here, to state that Professor Griffin and I offer only conclusory statements and personal opinions without evidentiary support is incorrect and misleading, to say the least. We provide ample evidentiary support in published papers, including papers in established peer-reviewed journals such as The Environmentalist.
But he wouldn't swear under oath that those were correct.
Nope. Yeah, so it puts out a good article asking for, can we help?
It's a magic show. It's a magic show.
It is. People read that and think, oh, they're really trying to help her. And really, they're not. Really.
They were using her.
Oh, absolutely. Well, was she not encouraged to do this?
She was encouraged. I saw the email from David Ray Griffin to April Gallup encouraging her to file the case.
Excellent. There you go.
And the same with William...
Helen Mariani?
No, Kevin Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
you know, to get him to David Griffin encouraged him to file against NIST, and then send to represent Underwriters Lab and tell NIST that they're wrong, but that got him fired because he was representing the steel department, not the wastewater treatment department. Kevin Rye is a chemist who deals with, you know, wastewater treatment plants. This is my understanding, but he represented himself as like a materials engineer. It would be like my, you know, when I was a faculty member at Clemson, if I had written a letter to somebody representing the biology department about a biological issue, that'd be misrepresentation. So anyway, David Ray Griffin egged him on, and he filed something representing Underwriters Lab's steel tests. He worked for Underwriters Lab, but, you know, in water treatment measurements. And so he was fired for, you know, that misrepresentation. And then he played it up as wrongful termination. But I think he initially was a sacrificial lamb, so to speak, from you know, being egged on to make noise. They say, "Oh, see, you know, you shouldn't speak up because you can get fired."
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen Richard Gage in talks where members of the audience have asked him, "You've got all this evidence. Why aren't you submitting it into a court case?" And he says, "We're not lawyers. What we do is we put this evidence out for you to do that."
But he's an architect from San Francisco who doesn't even know about seismic charts. So why is he, you know, he's not qualified to do what he's doing either?
No. He's an architect, not an engineer.
Yeah, architects are that's something that I think the audience might benefit knowing about. Architects are like artists of buildings. You know, how's the space feel in this design? How's it feel over here? They aren't worrying about the strength of the steel here. How many bolts do you need? How many acres of concrete? And how thick, you know, how much rebar goes in this concrete? That's what engineers do.
Now, an architect will go, "Shall we put an arch in this doorway? Engineer, is it possible to make this into an archway?" And he has to get clarification to make sure it's feasible.
Yeah, can we make this an archway here? Is there enough support? You know, without, we want this to appear to be balanced on nothing. You know, you've seen some really interesting architecture where it looks like there's nothing supporting something.
Yeah.
That's the concept of it comes from an architect. But then the mechanics of it come from an engineer who figures out how to do it structurally. And then there's the builders who follow directions and build it. In engineering schools, often, you know, it's they have special watered-down statics class for architects, you know, statics for architecture students, because they can't hack it. And that's the first basic engineering course engineers take. The architects, you know, can't easily hack the math or anything to understand it. And that's basically figuring out F equals MA, or the sum of the forces equal, you know, the sum of the forces on the other side. That's too much for them to handle. So, you know, being an architect doesn't qualify you to understand structural integrity of a building. No way.
So he's not even qualified to actually discuss what he's discussing, is he really, Mr. Gage?
Correct.
I'm talking about you.
Correct. He's not a scientist. He's an artist or a businessman. There's some parts of architecture where they, you know, like you're going to make a strip mall or cut up land into, you know, where the road goes in the subdivision, it curves around, how you're going to chop up the land for putting houses on. And that's more of a business type thing, but you know, true architect, and you can look at the designs of famous architects. It's all about how's the building look, how's it make you feel, what's the concept. But, you know, like remember the twisted building, the torso
yep.
building. You know, that's not an engineer doing that. That's an architect doing it, an engineer figuring out how to do it. You know, the architect has the idea, But it's like a three-dimensional painting. Sort of like an interior designer in a way. It's more associated with that. How does the space in this room make you feel? Does it inspire you, wake you up, or make you feel empowered? I'm an engineer trying to describe an architect's job. That's the best I can do.
Clip from the Liars page of Richard Gage getting caught by the guy that he's getting interviewed by. No, it's
Dr. Abe.
Oh, well.
No, this is Ralph.
Sorry.
Ralph,
okay.
Because here we are, an unqualified engineer.
Have you examined all of the... She is extremely highly qualified, which you are not, as a structural physicist, interferometry, to do a complete... She's got the only one out there. She's put her name on the dotted line to file a case on it, a key tam case, a whistleblower, which I can't believe that you admit you don't know, but let's say you don't.
There are dozens of nuts out there with PhDs, Ralph.
Have you read her book and are you willing to debunk it with all of these different phenomena? Have you done that, or are you going to do that?
Now, with Judy Wood, if not going to acknowledge any of that evidence and just hand wave it away, then she's not practicing science. She's practicing witchcraft. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? The problem that I'm running into here, I have an architect that has no training in this at all, making all kinds of allegations without the evidence. Now, let's not be quiet.
So how can you say without
microspheres, those microspheres...
There you go. I mean, I think we've heard enough. It's just there you go. We've got an architect here that's not qualified. It's
What is interesting in that clip, though, he says she's totally ignoring the evidence of these iron-rich microspheres. And then the host points out, because he's read my book too, he says, well, she shows this that they have iron-rich microspheres in crop circles in England. That's not proof that... You know, you have to get it from thermite, and Gage is saying that it comes from thermite, and he's saying that she ignores that evidence. No, it's it right there in my book, showing that it doesn't, you know, mean anything specific. Because how do you explain why you find it in crop circles?
In other words, not only does Dr. Wood not ignore the evidence that Gage claims she ignores, she actually points out that evidence does not, you know, prove what Gage is saying it proves. As we just gave an example there, so it's actually, you know, Gage is completely out of order in both the language that he's using and the claims that he's making. But, you know, neither one is lies and the other is plain rude, you know, so it's rude lies. It's not nothing to do with facts.
Right where you cut it off, I think, is where he says, you know, after the host points out, well, they're found in crop circles in England, then Gage says something like, I've not seen that evidence. Well, so Gage is...
I'm talking here. Microspheres were found in crop circles in England, and there was no fire of the exact type of...
I haven't seen the evidence for that, so I can't confirm.
So right there, that's it. So he's admitting he is ignoring the evidence.
Yeah. He does that all the time. Well, I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that evidence. So Gage is the one ignoring the evidence, where Dr. Wood is the one who's not only not ignored it, but she's discussed it.
Yeah. He actually says she ignores the evidence in page 120 to 128 of her book. So that means Gage has got your book, and he's read it. Or he hasn't read it. He's cherry-picked to the section.
Page 122, page 123, page 124. And if you notice the comments in that video, for people who have read the book, they say, wait a minute, no, she doesn't say what he's claiming she says. If somebody has the book, look, it says the opposite of what he's saying.
It's very manipulative.
You know, I don't deny that there's, you know, aluminum powder, a reason for having aluminum powder and iron oxide in the dust. I don't deny that.
He says you deny molten metal running away.
Well, first of all, look at the, you know, his thing about thermite in the dust. You know, the dust has in it lots of stuff, including iron oxide and aluminum powder. But to extrapolate from there and make the leap, fill in this gap with speculation, say that somehow that proves what happened to buildings, that is no different than saying, I found, steel dust, steel particles in the dust. So therefore, in knowing that that steel makes up what scissors are, that proves that scissors cut up the building. It's identical in logic.
Yeah.
Just because you found, various ingredients in the dust, you can find all sorts of stuff because everything that was in the building, if the building turned to dust, and I think he's now coming to the point of it admitting that, if the building, the majority of the building turned to dust, you're going to find every constituent of the building in the dust. So how do you determine what, what's attributed to what?
Absolutely.
I'm sure there's steel filings in there are from scissors because everything just about turned to dust. The majority of the building turned to dust.
You talk about chocolate chips in the dust because there were obviously chocolate chip cookies in there, but that could have come from a chocolate chip muffin, a chocolate chip cake.
It doesn't even say that they're combined as cookies.
Yeah.
You have. I could actually read that portion. Let's see. Got the earmark here. Okay, the buildings were turned to dust, and therefore the dust would be expected to contain all traces, trace of all materials that were in the buildings. Finding traces of chocolate, sugar, and nano wheat, in other words, flour, in the dust would not prove that chocolate chip cookies turned the buildings to dust. It would not prove that the ingredients had even been combined as chocolate chip cookies in the buildings, nor that such cookies were capable of turning the building to dust. The same is true for thermite. Finding constituents of the building in the dust does not give proof of what happened to the buildings. In this case, focusing on particular constituents found in the dust and claiming that those constituents support a particular theory may actually distract attention away from the central and incontrovertible fact that most of the buildings and its contents were quite simply turned to dust.
Absolutely. You don't even know how these things are put back together.
Yeah, that's why I say finding steel dust doesn't mean that scissors, they were combined as scissors to cut the buildings. And I've seen some of the thermite folks say, well, it shouldn't have been there. Right, the building shouldn't have been turned to dust. Or also chocolate chip cookie remnant shouldn't have been there because, Susie Jones up there on the 85th floor was on a diet, so she shouldn't have had cookies in her dust. where do you stop? Saying it shouldn't have been there.
Yeah. Okay. What does Richard Gage say you deny? The molten metal. He says you deny the molten metal. Do you see molten metal?
I don't say I deny molten metal. I wouldn't say I deny molten metal. I say there's no evidence for hot molten metal. I say hot things glow, but not everything glows is hot. And if you see something glowing that's rolling over a piece of paper and the paper isn't burning, I think it's pretty safe to conclude that stuff is glowing for a reason other than being hot.
Yep. And the idea that there's rivers of molten iron underneath the trade center.
We're going back to 2006 now when I say, it was flowing. And it was still flowing after 6 weeks, Stephen Jones would say. And I'd say, okay, does it flow down in the morning and up at night? Or does it flow in the tributaries out to the ocean? Where is it flowing after 6 weeks?
Yeah.
If you have rivers of molten metal, where does it go? If you try to run it underwater, it's going to be bubbling up and doing a steam explosion. Yet we have lakes of water where firefighters are walking around in knee-deep water in the afternoon of 9/11. They don't look like boiled chicken. It's obviously so not
the idea
hot water.
The idea is molten metal. If it were molten metal, there would be no pools of water. The water would
if it was hot, if it was hot molten metal. The high heat, stories, just because it gets repeated over and over again, or because a first responder interpreted that way, that's just like, you know, you've heard the George Stephanopoulos clip where he says he asked a volunteer, you know, one volunteer, Robert Galinsky, explained the building all fell down into the ground, was pulverized, evaporated. Well, does that prove that the building was evaporated? No, that's his interpretation. The best he could do at that time, because he's explaining what you see in that testimony of his is that there's not enough material there to what you'd expect to see. And he's doing the best he can to explain it away. But that doesn't mean that he's a scientist and has determined that. So hearing explosions going off doesn't mean that bombs were used.
No, we started off with that. We started the episode with that.
It's the same theme. Just because somebody identifies a sound doesn't prove what caused the sound. The same with identifying a lack of building doesn't mean what happened to the building. Or it's when people start making this leap. As I often say, know what it is that you know that you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know, and don't fill in that gap with speculation, guesses, and assumptions, because then you're just solving an imaginary problem, not a real problem.
Well, the architects and engineers can do a nice little trick here on the witness testimonies, because they can not lie to you, and they can say, right, there's 503 testimonies, and there's 118 of these testimonies contain the word explosion, but they're not giving you any context for that. So that's
right. Let's name some of the things that exploded were people hitting the ground.
Well,
people
like
went out
the
windows hit the ground. They said that they exploded when they hit the ground. That doesn't mean it was a bomb.
When one of the first ones I saw, as I was going down the list a few hours ago, one of the first ones on the list, it says explosions. It sounded like an oven. It doesn't sound like a bomb. So if you actually read what they actually put it in context of what the person was saying, if you just pull out the word explosion. That's what Richard Gage is doing. He's pulling out the word explosion and saying there's so many people mentioning the word explosions, but you've got to read exactly what they're saying and say, oh, right, well, does that make me think like a bomb? It doesn't make you think like a bomb, does it? It makes you think like whatever they're saying. They're there.
He's quote mining.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just taking out of
context, just like the Larry Silverstein quotes that often get referred to, and there's
the Pullet.
Yeah, there's the Pullet. There's the BBC person, and I don't know if you were ready to talk about that, Matthew, the BBC thing.
James Hamilton.
Yeah, that often is cited as some kind of evidence of whatever. But if you stop and quit jumping to conclusions and stop and figure out what exactly you have evidence of, you have evidence of someone prematurely announcing that the building blew up. Okay, are they saying that she was handed a script to read? For what purpose? To out the fact that there was foreknowledge? That's kind of dumb. Or why would she be handed a script that she was supposed to read in a half hour? Why would she be handed that script early? For what reason? To make sure she announced it? Why not just wait till the building goes and then announce it then?
Yeah, just do it naturally.
Yeah, and so actually she wasn't the first one to say that. Another network said it. And she just, maybe that network thought that nobody knows what's going on there. They're just jumping on whatever story. And the one that I like to present is the premature announcement that One Liberty Plaza collapsed. It's still standing, so I guess it's a premature announcement, but it's still standing. We're still waiting for it to go. But so many people jump on that one because they're projecting on that the media's at fault. The media did it. They're busy putting blame first rather than looking at what the evidence is saying. Now, the evidence is clear that she misannounced it. And then I've got this other clip where right when Building 7 does go, and the person said, oh, no, but it already went. They don't know which building's which. And if there, you know, foreknowledge isn't going to, I mean, you're telling me you have some top secret, need to know basis operation going on, and you're going to leak it to the press to prematurely announce that Building 7 went?
Well, this is where, this is where I've got the clip here in front of me, the CNN clip. So,
for the Israeli foreign minister, a long time Israeli leader in any number of governments, joining us from Jerusalem tonight, where it is a little bit after 11 o'clock, about 10 minutes after 11. Thank you, sir, for joining us. We are getting information now that one of the other buildings, Building 7 in the World Trade Center complex, is on fire and has either collapsed or is collapsing. And you, to be honest, can see these pictures a little bit more clearly than I. But Building number 7, one of the buildings in this very large complex of buildings that is the Trade Center, there were the two towers, but then there are a number of support buildings around it, retail spaces, restaurants, office space, garages. The trains come in from New Jersey, bringing commuters, taking commuters back, come into the complex that is the World Trade Center. And now we are told that there's a fire there, and that building may collapse as well, as you can see.
So that story could have come out, and then BBC just latched onto it. You know, mm-hmm. They don't say it's collapsed, they're saying it may collapse.
Yeah, if you have all that, the fumes coming out of the building and things falling apart inside the building was disintegrating all afternoon. It doesn't take much brain power to conclude that building is going to come apart at some point if it's disintegrating all afternoon.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you put a balloon on a puddle of acid that eats, you know, the rubber balloon, at some point that balloon's going to pop. It's just eroding the outer surface of the balloon. Or putting something in the sun that is going to cause something to rupture. Or how about if you put a soda pop can in your freezer? At some point, it's going to explode. So it's something that you can kind of extrapolate as to what's happening, because it is losing structural integrity all afternoon.
Yeah, it's really weird that the BBC gets slammed for that, and then the CNN report gets nothing.
And not CNN.
Yeah, it gets nothing.
But why don't people make a big deal of One Liberty Plaza being prematurely announced as collapsing? It even says on the thing at the bottom of the screen, confirmed partial collapse of One Liberty Plaza. It hasn't collapsed. So it's but as for the testimonies. This is here's one. Firefighter who says, I'm talking about from chapter 3, I'm reading, as I was looking out the window, which was a total of just 5 seconds, another jumper comes by, kind of like clipped the edge of the roof and just vaporized. The guy just disappeared. There was no longer a body, just a big cloud of red. So, you know, if Gage is going through all the first responder testimonies, why don't they see something like that?
Yeah. The second one I wrote starts talking about body parts all over the place, and a firefighter covered up the torso of one just simply because he didn't want to look at it, I think.
Right, right. He, out of respect for it, he put his jacket on it. And I've seen body parts just going everywhere when they hit the ground. So you'd see one guy hit, and then there was a boom, and you see his arms and legs just fly off. So there's a person going boom. Is that did Richard Gage count that as a bomb?
Well, he could do.
This is the thing I really wonder about when people claim they go through the first responder testimony, because the truth is in there. And I'll read this last one, and I put it as the last one because it is so sickening. And the guy ends, "Yes, I'm done." He says, "Going up West Street, there were other companies, but we were distracted. There were just bodies all over the place and parts, and it was just clothes and flesh. I remember a guy getting off the rig and stepping like he was stepping. I thought he stepped in dog manure. It was bodies. Yes, I'm done." Now, there's a lot of testimony like that.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Mr. Gage see any of those?
Yeah, well, apparently Judy Wood
Dr. Judy Wood denies the witness testimonies. But there's over 100 in your book.
So yeah, at least. And there's, you know.
So it's, again, if he just says something, people just lap it up. They don't actually check to find out where he's accurate, how accurate his statement is.
Right. There's quite a few other ones that, you know, I was reading to you the other day. I don't know which ones are good.
Yeah. Well, we've got
Here's one guy who says, I'm thinking that it was the top third that came off. But because the cloud is dust still there, but then he learns that it's dust and powder. There's nothing left of the building. He didn't hear a big boom go off. He didn't hear a bang. There's an absence of sound. And he's expecting, he thought just the top of the building tipped over because that's all he could see, and then there's dust all over the place. When the dust cleared, where's the building? He was surprised to find the building missing.
Well, I think that's the general theme for people who were there, that the shock that the buildings suddenly aren't there.
And that it was not smoke, because this is a good one. So somebody, which actually helped me, I don't know who it was, after somebody said, I can't breathe, somebody, I don't know which direction it came from, screamed out, don't panic, relax. It's not smoke. It's just dust. Just relax. Because when smoke fills the air, it displaces the oxygen. And these guys were worried that they're goners, that this was smoke and they would be dead. But, hey, you know, just relax. It's just dust. It's not smoke.
That's why you have to get down underground to get underneath the smoke.
Right. Now, with the dust, they had to stick their face in their armpit of their shirt to use their clothing for an air filter because there's so much. This guy talks about, he says, at that point, when I started to realize my mouth was filling up like with a sandball, all of a sudden I realized when whoever said that, now I'm starting to pay attention to my surroundings, I realized there was no heat. You could breathe. Stuff was going in your mouth, and it was a cool air coming in when you breathe it. So I said, maybe he was right. You couldn't see it. It was gritty, but everything was black because it blocked out all the sun. But you know, it was initially cooler than ambient temperature, and you could breathe, meaning it was not smoke.
So when Richard Gage says you deny heat, you don't deny
that was
heat.
Chief fire, there's, that was a chief fire marshal that said that.
There's just no evidence of heat. This is what he's missing, or he's trying to cover up. When he says that you deny heat, you don't deny it. Just that it's not there. There's nothing to deny.
And I think most people who looked at the what was going on TV, you see all this unburned paper fluttering all over the place. So if you had bombs blowing up the building, hot bombs, they produce lots of heat. Or even the, you know, spray on thermite or spray on nukes or whatever the end thing is. Both of those produce heat and lots of it. You would have paper on fire.
Well, we're running out of time right now. So any closing thoughts?
For me or it just.
For either. Yeah, is that just still with us?
I'm still here.
Oh, yeah. Any closing thoughts, Andrew?
Well, I think really people just need to be very aware that a lot of the groups, you know, like A911, are set up to divert people away from what actually happened. And, you know, only by trying to get your hands on the actual evidence, you know, are you going to be able to verify that what they're saying is true? And I mean, we've gone off into a number of different areas, but largely based on evidence, which we know about. And people, I think, you know, should try and gain as much of that knowledge as they can. And that applies not just to 9/11 research, but, you know, for example, I've been talking about the chemtrail phenomenon. And I think the same sort of thing is going on with that field of research, or that movement, if you want to call it a movement, you know, I would argue quite strongly that the same process is ongoing. And I think, you know, Matthew, you and I would perhaps also say the same thing is going on with some of the health issues and the false information that's circulated about alternative health by some websites. Yeah. So, you know, it's across the board, really, that, you know, you've got to be really careful that you do research as much as you can and try and go to the raw evidence and not just people's statements about it.
And looking at, you know, cutting into this theme of the mainstream media, they don't make these statements because there's a problem with them. They can't source them. There's no sourcing for them. You know, why does the mainstream media not talk about mini nukes in the buildings or bombs in the buildings? They don't have any evidence of it.
No, but they do talk about things that they don't have evidence for, or they kind of have evidence for. Yeah.
They don't have an end point, but they leave it at that. They can correctly say that NIST concluded blah blah blah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's their interpretation of what they believe NIST concluded. It's a misleading truth, but they don't. You know, people get upset. They don't present, you know, their favorite conspiracy theory. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
If they could just like take it into court, you know, why don't they take it into court? If they claim that they have evidence of something, a proof of something, and don't just have a theory, why don't they take it to court?
Yep. Okay. And on that note, we'll leave it, and we'll be back next week. So thank you for listening. This is Red Pill Raw Truth. Thank you very much.
Thanks.